Welcome to Let's Talk Learning Disabilities with Lori Peterson and Abby Weinstein. Lori and Abby spend their days talking about dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia, and ADHD. They talk to parents of struggling students and adults who have had a lifetime of academic challenges. They want to share those stories along with their own insights with you. So, let's talk learning disabilities.
This is Lori.
And this is Abby.
Welcome to episode 41 of Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. How are you today, Abby?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. I'm good. So today we have a very interesting guest. Anne Kaplan is with us. Anne is a parenting coach. We're going to talk about all kinds of things, parenting, coaching, all that good stuff. So I think this is going to be a really exciting episode. I think we've got a lot of information people will enjoy. So
absolutely.
Anne, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So can you just start off by telling us just a little bit of kind of a more specifically about, I was very general about what you do and kind of what a coach, a parent coach does.
Yeah. I love that you actually included that in your questions because I think a lot of people have no idea what coaching is, which why would they?
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. So coaching is really just about helping you figure out what's right for you and holding you accountable and helping you strategize, tapping into your own creative problem solving skills and alignment and inner knowing and all of those things. So I think a lot of times people think I'm going to hire a coach and she'll just tell me what to do about my kid or about this woman. And actually, I totally can do that, but that it wouldn't actually be considered coaching and it probably wouldn't help you a whole lot because you would just be kind of like sort of trying a one size fits all approach to a problem that's very unique, especially parenting kids who are neuroatypical. And so what's most important is really helping you feel super aligned and kind of eyes on the prize for your own situation and aligned with your own kid. And as all of us as parenting professionals know, the most important thing, the gold standard in parenting is attunement with our children, not attunement with a coach that you're paying.
This is true. So when you have a parent that reaches out to you, and we're going to talk about some of the more common things you probably hear, but kind of how do you get things started? Like, how do you get the ball rolling with them?
Yeah. So when I very first meet with someone, we do a discovery call. That's really just a chance for me to get to know everything and anything about this parent. So I like to say that the first half of that call is really just me listening and answering questions. And until I feel like I have a really comprehensive picture of what's going on, then I kind of turn the tables and give my honest feedback and paint a picture of what's possible and how we can get there and what that looks like and all of that stuff. But really it's getting the ball rolling involves like us getting to know each other and creating, an attachment with each other so that we can have trust and confidence in each other and really discover whatever solution is waiting for this parent.
So if you're not telling them what to do, how do they get to the place where they have happy, healthy,
they learn from you.
Yeah. So in the coaching world, I would be considered what's called a coach / consultant. So part of my job is educating my clients. So I will almost never tell my client like, well, you need to do X, Y, and Z. But I absolutely raise awareness about, well, these are considered to be the best approaches to this kind of situation. What are your thoughts on that? What if that feels most aligned to you? How could that apply in this situation? What does boundaries and consequences look like in terms of homework, for example, or in terms of getting ready for school on time? What consequence fits this situation? What thoughts and feelings and maybe reservations do you have about even giving a consequence and things like that? So, you know, I'm not there to support you in starting to use like corporal punishment on your kids because that's the solution you came up with. Like, we're not going there together, but we're going to learn a ton about like, what does authoritative parenting look like and how can you have a high degree of connection and attunement with your child while you are also having a high level of leadership and control in your family? And what are the ways that we move the arrow up in the control world? And what are the ways we move the arrow up in the attunement world? But yeah, all those little nuts and bolts and things like that are things that I help you figure out versus telling you what to do. Like, oh, you should take their phone away, or you should, you know, tell them they can't have screen time tonight or whatever. That's probably not going to work if I'm just like kind of throwing consequences at you.
Mm-hmm. And so do a lot of parents come to you and not really even understand the idea of consequences and how, what a consequence is or how to implement consequences?
I think that happens. I think also a lot of times all of us come to parenting with kind of like a little bit of a grab bag of experiences and messages that we've gotten as we were growing up and things like that. And so, you know, it could happen where a client comes to me or is like, well, my parents spanked me and that worked out great. So, you know, what's the problem here? Or my parents spanked me and that was extremely awful to me. And now I have like fear and anxiety about having any sort of consequences for my children because I don't ever want my kid to see me the way that I saw my parents. Or my parent was super, super permissive and let me do whatever I wanted. And that was really not okay for me because I felt out of control. So now I'm going to like micromanage every aspect of my child's life. So it's not necessarily that people don't know what a consequence is, but we all have our own like thoughts and emotions and feelings and beliefs about parenting mm-hmm. and about using consequences. And then it definitely does happen where people think the biggest thing that I see happening is people confusing consequences and punishments. And mm-hmm. so they don't want a consequence because they're trying to be non-punitive, or they think they're consequencing, but they're actually punishing their children.
Oh, that's interesting.
That is interesting.
So how many, and we've got some real specifics, but I have a couple more general questions. And one of those being, because it sounds like a lot of the parents that come to you, their concerns have a real emotional piece to it. So how many are there many of your clients that are already working with a counselor? And how many do you then say it might be a good idea to also be working with a counselor while we're working together?
Yeah. So part of my job as a coach is to have a very clear line between what is coaching, what is therapy, and really stick to my wheelhouse and my scope of practice. So it could happen. And it certainly does happen sometimes where as I'm working with a client, we realize that, you know, there's an emotional component that is beyond the scope of coaching. And so I certainly do have clients who either already are working with therapists or decide to start working with therapists while we're working together. And that's really not a problem. You know, coaching and therapy, I would say like the Venn diagram of the two definitely overlap, but they're very different. You know, therapy is really about looking to the past and understanding the past and really healing wounds from the past. And coaching, we absolutely acknowledge and understand and talk about the past. And then it's really about asking the question like, okay, now we understand why we're where we are. What do we want to do about it? So it's a much more forward focused and action oriented approach to creating a healthy life for yourself or a healthy relationship or whatever it is that you're working on. And so there's a place for both of those things. And depending on how easily you're able to move through your emotions and have a kind of clear vision on what you want to do and what you want to accomplish, that's really what determines whether you need like additional support in that emotional landscape.
No, that makes sense.
That does make sense. So what would you say are the most common? You had mentioned coaching, talking about maybe homework or getting ready for school in the morning. What would you say are the most common reasons parents seek you out for parent coaching?
Mm-hmm. Well, it just kind of depends on the age of the kids because I work with people all the way from toddlers to teens. So usually with toddlers, we're talking about tantrums, power struggles, the classics, mm-hmm. like no phase of life, all of that stuff. And I think depending on my client, sometimes that kind of veers into like questions of like body autonomy and things like that, because for different people have a different comfort level of saying, you know, it's not okay for you to behave this way. It looks like you need to be by yourself and pick their kid up and put them in their room for some time by themselves or whatever. And other parents don't feel good about that. Or how about, like, you know, wrestling your kid into a car seat or trying to force them to get dressed in the morning and stuff like that. There's a lot of, like, physicality that goes into the mix with toddlers, even if we're just talking about the physicality of, like, chasing after them in the playground and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a very physical job, mothering or fathering or parenting a toddler. But then with my older, my clients who have older kids, we talk a lot more about, you know, smart choices and emancipation and autonomy and relationships and things like that. And then behavior challenges are often about, like you said, schoolwork, friend choices, chores, responsibilities, respect sometimes, I would say. And then there's a lot of times where parents think that what the problem is respect, but it really is not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was just going to say, I bet there's probably a common theme through a lot of those, why you may be struggling with these five things with your child, they're all kind of related to mm-hmm. this thing, right. Whatever it is.
Yep, absolutely. I say, like, that's why it's so easy for me to work with parents who have kids of any age, because the principles of effective parenting never change. You know, we get hung up as parents on trying to control things that are out of our control, trying to, like, manage the outcomes for our kids or the emotions of our kids. We wind up kind of overpowering them, which creates power struggles. And we also get super emotionally invested in our children's behavior, which leads us to behave in extremely emotionally intense ways that sabotage any hope of us ever improving our kids' behavior, whether it's super intense positive emotion, like, oh my gosh, you're amazing, look what you did, and not, you're like, the sun shines out of you, mm-hmm. all this stuff, or negative on the other hand of, like, you're disrespectful to me, how dare you talk to me that way, you know, all the yelling and anger and stuff like that. And so, like, I talk to my clients, the four fundamentals of effective parenting are that you can't control anyone but yourself, and nor do you have the right to. Number two is all human beings desire control and autonomy in their lives, including toddlers and children. Like, outside of infancy, every human being wants agency. Number three is experiences are the best teachers. So, like, that TED talk that you give your kid is not going to change their behavior at all. The more you're talking, the less you're teaching. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth is intensity negates everything. You have to be neutral all the time, as much as you possibly can. Mm-hmm.
That's hard. That's awesome. That's crazy.
That does sum it up very well.
It really
well.
Does. And so what we wanted to do is maybe just get you to talk a little bit about the things that we hear most, you know, maybe we can share with our parents, you know, like the homework struggles, and hearing you say those things, I'm like, you can, you know, I want you to walk through, but I'm thinking, man, you can apply those four things just to homework. So mm-hmm. I love that. That is awesome. So, Right. Okay. So homework struggles, we hear about homework struggles from first graders mm-hmm. who don't want to sit down because it's hard, it's boring, there's more fun things to do mm-hmm. all the way up to high school kids who just don't even know how to organize their time and would rather be on their phones or their, you know, whatever. So how do you help parents navigate the muddy, muddy waters of homework?
Yeah, totally. So, you definitely can apply all four of those principles here. So the first one is really the fourth one, which is don't get upset. You cannot get upset. You cannot be caring more about your kid's outcome than they care. Because as soon as you have created that emotional investment, two things are going to happen. Your kid is really super amazing at attuning to your emotions. And as soon as they know that you've taken ownership of this, they won't take ownership of it. Whether you say that out loud or it's just an energetic thing that they pick up on, it's definitely going to happen where it's kind of like, why would I care? My mom's got this, right? So, and the other thing that happens when you get too emotionally invested is you're definitely going to end up yelling and bargaining and bribing and negotiating and all these parenting strategies that totally never work. They only make things worse. And that happens because you care so deeply that they do their homework. You have to, I won't swear on this podcast, but I have a very big potty mouth. Anyone's considering working with me, you need to talk to them because it's like, I will
We're
say,
okay.
You need to give less craps about this. You really need to give zero craps. Okay. So, because once you don't care, And I'm using that in this, you know, obviously tongue-in-cheek way. But once you care less than your kid does about their outcome, it becomes a lot easier for you to actually give them that experience of learning. Well, what happens when you make a poor decision? What happens when you don't do your homework? Well, in this family, for example, screens are for kids who have finished their homework. Or on the weekends, you know, XYZ privilege is for kids who have no missing assignments. That one came really in handy during the pandemic because now really go look and see all the missing assignments, right? And you can actually follow through with that without getting upset. Oh, you chose not to do that. Well, you do you, like choice and agency, right? Like that was your choice. Might not be what I would choose, but that's cool. And you are very well aware of how this family works. So you chose not to have screens, like whatever. And if you're upset about it, I can totally understand that. I can actually even be empathetic about how upset you are about the outcome, because I truly can feel sorry for you instead of being angry. Like, well, if you didn't want to miss out on screens, you should have done your homework. I told you, right? That's not helpful. But to say, like, I can totally understand why you're upset right now. I'd be really bummed out too if I had to sit in my room while everyone's having family movie night because I don't have screens this weekend. Like, I'd feel the same way if I were you. And next week, you can make a different choice and I'll trust you to know what's right for you. And that's it.
I love that. So saying no screen time, you made the choice, basically. Yeah. Is that a consequence?
Yes.
You know, is that an expectation that you make sure they understand they have to lay out in the beginning that if you do your homework, then you earn screen time?
So that's a question I get all the time, which is like, okay, so now I'm starting this new thing. I need to like have like family meeting, come to Jesus moment. Everyone needs to know like this is the new order. There's nothing wrong with doing that once. But it's important for us all to know that we're doing that for ourselves, not our kids. Like your kid already knows he's supposed to do his homework. You're not telling him anything he doesn't already know. And this new way of responding to the fact that he didn't do his homework is probably way less harsh than what's been happening up until now. So it's not like you're like setting him up unfairly. But if it's what you need to do for yourself to feel like 100% confident and ready to like go for it with this plan, then, you know, go for it. That's fine. If you continue to have these like, no, for real, we're really going to do this thing now. Maybe you didn't get the memo. That's not actually giving anyone a heads up. That's just giving them lots and lots of second chances, which isn't going to help.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that, you know, you had said like out of those four things, that was kind of like the number one. What else in there? What other tools do you give parents to help with that? I mean, that to me is, I love the natural
important
consequences and I like not caring
because I don't, emotionless.
I don't have the energy or the time to do your homework. So I'd rather just take it off my plate. But
I've said so often, because like most kids, they really do care at some level, if they're doing a good job in school, or if they, you know, it's not fun to be in school the next day and everyone else is turning their homework in and you're like, oh shoot, you know, that stinks. Kids don't like that, but they also like, they almost can't even connect with how they feel about their homework and their work ethic and, you know, taking care of their to-do list and stuff. They can't really connect with how they feel about it if your emotions about it are overshadowing everything else. And it's hard to suss out for a kid, like, am I upset about this because my mom's upset with me and I hate when my mom's upset? Or am I upset about this because it actually matters to me? And the whole point of all those four principles is to set up a world in which it matters to our children to make good choices, because it works out better for them to make good choices. And the more we can, like, the whole point of discipline is really about helping kids connect the dots between the choice they make and the outcome they create. And everything that comes from that connection of those dots, responsibility, accountability, empowerment, realizing that you're the agents in your own life, like all of those things come from that. And the more we step out of the way, the more the line between those two things becomes a straight line instead of a circuitous maze for kids. And so like that, that neutrality is just so, so important. And I just think also, of course, like this is a podcast that's about talking about neuroatypical kids and challenges that kids have with learning and stuff like that. It's really easy to fall into the trap of believing like, well, my kid is different, which is true. And therefore, they can't XYZ. And so therefore these parenting strategies that are like categorically ineffective, I should start using, like giving lots and lots of chances, or making excuses, or doing it for them, or pressuring them, or sitting right next to them and like cramming it down their throat. Like, neuroatypical kids need structure and predictability and boundaries and consequences even more than all the quote unquote normies out there, because mm-hmm. because the more we parent this way, the more linear that line becomes. And it's so important for these kids to be in a place where that line is as straight as possible.
Well, and to not to interrupt, but don't you think our neuroatypical kids, they want the same things? They want to be independent. They want, you know, they want ownership. They want all the same things. It's just going about it.
100%, because there's a whole, it's what do they need? It's also what do they want? And also, like, what is the world they live in? Well, it's the same world that everybody mm-hmm. So is it probably going to take, a neurodivergent kid longer to learn how to pack his backpack by himself in the morning or be ready for school on time? Yeah, it's probably going to take a way longer time, and you're going to want to blow your brains out. And that's just the way it is. Like, there's no way to make that faster necessarily, but you definitely can show up in ways that make it longer or never mm-hmm. at all. But it's not a problem that all different kids have certain things in their lives that are going to be more of a challenge than others. And for a neurodivergent kid, it might be some of these life skill things. Well, that's no biggie. You know, it just means that we need to show up for a longer period of time. Like, I have an 8-year-old who took a hot minute to remember to turn his homework in. And, we have a rule in our house, you know, screens are for kids who turn their homework in. So he would come home from school. I'd say, did you turn your homework in? He'd say, no, I forgot. And I'd be like, oh man, that stinks. No worries. You'll get another chance to turn it in tomorrow. But I really want to watch TV. I'm like, I know. I really want to do. We're in the middle of watching Harry Potter. And I really want to watch it with you. But I bet you're going to remember tomorrow. And at some point, it took him like a full, like, I would say 10 days to actually learn this, which is, I would say, pretty typical. He is not a neurodivergent kiddo, but at some point during those 10 days, he came home and he was mad at himself. And I know the parents listening to this podcast know what I'm talking about. They're like, he said, I just can't learn it, Mom. And it would have been really easy for me to be like, well, maybe he really can't learn it. Maybe I'm expecting too much of him. And, you know, and then like kind of almost betray myself in my parenting. Mm-hmm. For me, my parenting is something that's very, very aligned with who I am and my beliefs and everything like that, because I've worked to make it that way. For me to parent my son in a different way would truly be for me to betray myself. But it would be really tempting for me to do that. But instead, you know, because I've done all this work or whatever, I'm able to show up and say, you know what, buddy, I know it feels like you can't learn it. You just haven't learned it yet. You're learning it right now. And I know you're going to figure it out. And, you know, he did. Had to forget a couple more times.
Mm-hmm. But how good did he feel, right? Like when he did remember it.
Yeah, totally. And then when he remembers to turn it in, it's like big high five. That's so great. And even then, we talk a lot in our work about like, what's the difference between praise and observation? Which is more important for me to say, I'm so proud of you, or I can see you feel so great right now. Because we all want our kids to be doing things for the quote unquote right reasons, and making me happy is not the right reason.
Right.
That's interesting. I heard that somewhere a long time ago. And that was one thing I always took with me. Like, you should be so proud of yourself, like that, you know, instead of like, I'm so proud of mm-hmm. you, you know, and I do think that's powerful.
Kind of build in that intrinsic motivation right. and reward and praise for themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that you stayed consistent. You didn't give in and say, well, I'm going to
let it go this time.
Let it go this time. Or I'm going to remind you, or I'm going to bring your homework up to the teacher and turn it in for you. And so mm-hmm. you stuck to your guns and stayed consistent. It took right. him a little bit longer, but he eventually he learned it.
Right.
That's awesome.
I think a lot for parents of younger kids, like, so my 8-year-old is my youngest. I have 3 older children. So I have gone through second grade now many times. And I know like it's different now than it was when my older kids were younger. COVID was something that made that happen. Like, parents aren't allowed to go into the school anymore. So like, there's nothing I can do to help him. Mm-hmm. homework in. He simply has to learn to turn it in. And so, you know, that's maybe is almost a blessing in disguise in a kind of a way, because probably one of my older kids back in the day, I could have actually like walked with them to the classroom and said, now, don't you remember you have something that you need to do right now? What is it? Right? Yeah. But that's not an option right now for me. And that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. It is tempting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I did toy around with the idea of like emailing the teacher, but I didn't. And I'm very glad.
Yay. Okay. So what about discipline when kids do things, you know, that not turning in homework is one thing, and that's a lesson to learn. But like, poor I don't choices. Know, when they make poor choices, they get in a fight at school, or they, you know, talk back to a teacher, or they get their clip moved, or their whatever. Or like,
yes.
When there's discipline, how do you help parents handle that appropriately?
Yeah, so this is a great question, because especially when it comes to school, we almost have like a three-tiered approach. Like the first tier is, basically, unless the school is telling you that you need to get involved, you don't need to get involved. The school should have a discipline plan in place. And your child is not the first child who threw a shoe or bit somebody or threw a chair. Even I had a client who dealt with that last year. Yeah. So they should have a plan in place of what do we do with misbehavior. If you're getting calls from the school, the first question to ask is, thank you so much for letting me know. What is your plan to deal with misbehavior? And if they're like, our plan is to tell you about it, you could say, well, that's not enough. I'm not there and I'm not going to be there. So, you know, I'm here to support you in whatever your discipline plan is, but I'm not a discipline plan for your school. Right. And so that's kind of step one, is to really truly like hand the problem back to the school, not in a way of like, not my problem, but in a way that's like, you need to take the lead on discipline in your facility and I will back you up however that looks. And then give them a chance, give the school a chance to not need you to do anything more. If the behavior still continues, that's when we need to have like a conversation that's about how am I going to back up the school at home? And here's where I really encourage you not to do the pickup conversation, like right in front of your kid. Did we have a good day or a bad day? Thumbs up, thumbs down, you know, disappointed look on the teacher's face or whatever. Like, because then school and probably there's people listening to this who have actually experienced this because it's really common. School becomes this thing where there's like an ultimatum or like a come to Jesus moment at the end of the day, or kids decide, I don't care. I'm bad. That's who I am anyway. Mm-hmm. In the car on the way home to be like, I was bad today, mom, or I was good today, mom, or whatever. And you can just tell like this kid's whole identity is now wrapped up in like whether they were good or bad today. And it's not healthy, right? So you might need to set a boundary with the school that says, I want to know what's going on with my kid. I will not be discussing it with you, even in facial expressions at pickup time. Email me, text me. I want to know. But this is not the forum for that. And then you need to have some stuff in place at home to back up the school. So, and it's not like, what did you do in school today? Well, now you're just inviting your child to start lying to you, which is like a whole nother discipline problem that you've created for yourself. Like, don't do that. You can just say, hey, turns out that you threw a chair today at school, buddy. And that's a real bummer, because when we have bad choices at school, this is what happens at home, whatever that consequence is. But, you know, confronting them with like, you know, confess to what you did, or like putting them on trial every day at pickup, it's not even like, we don't even need to go down the rabbit hole about whether or not that's right or wrong. It just doesn't work. So it's not worth it to do it anyhow.
You know, I think we've had some parents that I've talked to even this recently that have said, you know, the school will call me when there's a problem and want me to fix it. And, you know, we're like, well, no, that's there. You know, you weren't there. Like, this is there. It was in their classroom. It happened. They need to, if they want it to stop,
right,
they're going to have to put some consequences in place.
Well, I think that what I'm seeing in a trend in schools right now is sometimes teachers do this really well and nuanced, where they will reach out and say, hey, I just want to know, is there something you're doing at home? Like what tends to work for your kiddo? Cause I want to, you know, honor that, or that's really useful information for me. And that's great. if I were the coach of the teacher, I would say, like, it's your classroom. It is great information for you to have, but ultimately you need to decide, like, what is your approach to discipline that honors whatever the school's rules are and boundaries around, you know, obviously there's limitations to what a school is even allowed to do and stuff like that. But, you know, creating your own approach to discipline. And then I think there are some legitimately, and I see this more with like preschools and daycare centers or private schools, because they don't have quite as like, they can kind of follow their own whatever. But I do see schools just not having a plan at all in place. And
it's crazy.
Just calling the parents.
Right.
And even having them come get the child from school and pick them up, which in my opinion is actually rewarding the child for their behavior because they get to escape school.
Yeah. So there's things we can do about that to make it less of a reward. And in some cases, like for safety reasons or something, it might be that you have to come pick your kiddo up.
Sure.
And stuff like that. You know, there's never like a one size fits all approach to this stuff, but it is, I think, really almost doesn't even occur to parents because we feel like we're the ones who are in the principal's office when we get that call or that email home. We forget that we actually have agency. And what I often see is parents either feeling so humiliated and ashamed and upset about what happened, or just complete mama bear and start like raging at the school or the kid. Because they feel like attacked or called out. But both of those behaviors are coming from the same place, which is that you feel ashamed and called out and judged.
Judged.
Right. Exactly. And so if you can talk about that emotional place we were talking about earlier, like if you need to have a conversation with yourself and realize like this is just, you can look at those calls and emails home as just information. Johnny threw a chair today is the same as Johnny was wearing a yellow shirt today. It's just information for you, and you get to decide how you're going to respond to that. And there will be things that happen in class that you can decide, like you actually don't think are a big deal at all. And the school can be upset about it if they want to, but it doesn't really violate any of your values. Like, for example, a kid saying like a body part name. Or something like that.
So do you feel like though, so I'm imagining all of this with like school age kids, even up to middle school, but what happens when the kids are big kids and they're mm-hmm. high school kids and they can get in the car and drive away, or they're bigger than you and they're, I don't know. I feel like the dynamics shift a little bit. Is your coaching techniques the same for all ages, or does it start to turn and adapt a little bit to something different as they get older?
I would say yes, and is the short answer to the question. So the principles are always the same. With teenagers, there's some nuances that it's really important to understand, because not because it's going to change you those principles, but because it's going to almost like make them more nuanced. So for example, it's really common mistake people make with teenagers. It's like the kids are older, their mistakes are quote unquote worse. And also the stakes are higher. So my punishment, which I mean, right there, that's a wrongheaded approach, or my consequence needs to be extreme because the behavior was extreme. The risk is extreme. So now it's like, I'm taking your phone for a week, or you're never going to see the light of day, or you can't go out with that girl until you graduate, or you can't get your license because until you do X, Y, and Z, like that really doesn't work for teenagers. And it's not really a great approach for little kids either, but we just don't really see that approach being taken as much for little kids. But the problem is like teenagers' brains are thinking about the immediacy. Like an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old is more capable of long-term planning than a 16-year-old. Mm-hmm. So trying to say like a month from now, I'll give you the keys back. And in the meantime, you need to do like these lists of perfection that I'm going to give you. Your child, like a month from now, it's like, doesn't even exist to them. And now it's like you have set an impossible task before them. First of all, that's super far away. That's a really long time that they have to be good. And also probably your standards for what will get them their keys back are really high. And especially over the course of a whole month, what is the likelihood that your kid's not going to screw up? Zero.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So your child is actually accurate in saying like, well, I'm never going to do it, so screw it. And then their behavior will often become worse. Like we all had a friend in high school, or maybe we were the friend in high school, was like always grounded. Before they even reached the end of the week that they were grounded for another week. And did those mm-hmm. kids stop misbehaving? No, they just got really good at sneaking out of their house and doing this or that. Like the consequence was completely meaningless to the child at that point, except for the fact that they would be having consistent interactions with their parents where they got a lot of shame messages. But as far as like modifying their behavior, it's totally ineffective. So small subtleties like that, where it's like, okay, your kid is a teenager now, so we really need to keep these factors in mind that we probably didn't need to consider before when they were younger. And then also, teenagers and tweens also, like, the relationship becomes so much more important. I don't want to say it's more important, but it's more often neglected. So then it becomes something that we need to put more energy into. With your toddler, like, you might be fighting with your toddler all the time, but I guarantee there's probably just as much time where you're like snuggling and holding them and thinking about how cute they are and taking pictures for Instagram of them with like cake all over their faces and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So your relationship doesn't get put on the back burner as easily as it does with older kids. So that's another difference with older kids. I really pay a lot of attention to like, how are you communicating? And then also like older kids need to be more emancipated than younger kids. There's a big independence process that may be getting neglected. And what often happens with teenagers is because their behavior becomes heinous, you wind up actually becoming more controlling and battening down the hatches way more. So a 16-year-old could be having way more restrictions than they did when they were 10.
Mm-hmm.
So those are kind of the little differences, but the principles never change.
Hmm. That's awesome.
What about, so talking about neuroatypical children or students, and do you use different strategies for example, a student with ADHD that has a lot of impulsivity that maybe, you know, I've seen a lot of parents in the past use that as an excuse for behavior that, mm-hmm. you know, he can't control it or she couldn't help it. She's impulsive. She has ADHD. Mm-hmm. Do your strategies for teaching and helping parents come to, you know, learn more about discipline, do they differ for students with ADHD or learning disabilities?
Mm-hmm. I think the strategies don't differ, but I would say the nuts and bolts differ. So for example, with a kiddo with ADHD versus a neurotypical kid, for a neurotypical kid, you might just say like, you need to get your homework done before your homework and chores need to be done before you have screens. And that's all you need to say. And the kid immediately is like, okay, well, I guess I better do my homework now. And then I'll do my chores after. And they've like laid out their evening. For a neuroatypical kid, saying that to them might not be enough. So that doesn't mean that you swoop in and do it, figure it out for them and say, okay, so I've laid out your entire evening. So because you have to do this before you can get screens, the consequence is the same. But you might say, hey, you need to get your chores done and your homework done before you have screens. What can I do to help you feel like you're ready to take on that responsibility? Or what do you need to be able to do that? And so those kids that are coming home saying like, I just can't do it, you know, then you can sit down and say, I'm here to help you. What do you think would help you remember to do things? Instead of how many of us like ADHD moms have we been given the advice, like make lists, checklists, have checklists all over your house. Mm-hmm. And I was just talking to a client yesterday whose kiddo has ADHD. And she's like, I realized he doesn't even use the checklist. I'm sitting here and making the checklist for him. I'm putting it in his backpack. I'm checking the checklist. He's literally doing nothing with the checklist. But if a checklist was something that this kid on his own had said, you know, I think a checklist might really help me, mom. Oh, great. What should we put on the checklist? Would you like pictures or do you want to draw it out? Do you want to write it or do you want to type it? You know, like this kid is still in the driver's seat and always the consequence is still there. And that's the other piece of this puzzle. When you stay with consequences instead of punishments, those two things can be true. Like what you were saying just now, about like, well, but he can't help it. And that's why he's acting this way. Yes, that is 100% true. And in this family, we don't get screens when we haven't done our homework. And I have all the empathy in the world for why you didn't do your homework. It's totally understandable why you didn't do your homework. And then also, and from a coaching perspective, I would be like kind of helping that mom chip away or that dad chip away at the idea that he can't do it. He can do it. It's probably going to take him a longer time to figure it out. It's probably going to require a lot of patience and compassion on your part and consistency and diligence. And you might, yes, have to be there to help him implement tools that make it possible for him to do that. It might be true to say, just saying this is the boundary, you know, good luck to you. It would set him up to fail. But saying this is the boundary and I'm here to help you figure out what you need to reach that boundary or to comply with that boundary, what that means is every kid can do it. What the answer to that question, what do you need to be able to do it, is different for everyone. Sure.
But I like that. Ability
of getting in there, it is possible.
So, I mean, I feel like we could talk all day. Like, this is so helpful. And I feel like so many of our parents, like, we have these kinds of conversations. And oftentimes we're not sure, you know, how to help, which is why we love to have people like you. So tell me how do you serve parents? Like, what are the different ways that you work with parents?
So I work both in a group coaching program. I run a group coaching program and for moms. And then I also work with couples and non-moms privately. So it's really up to whoever wants to work with me. We like in that discovery call, part of the work that we do is to figure out where do you belong? Where do you fit? Where you're going to get the best results? What feels right for you? And either way, no matter where you end up, you're going to get a full curriculum from me. That is, I would say, half parenting skills. Like, what are the consequences I want to use? And what do I do when we're not getting ready for school on time and all that stuff? And then the other half is that emotional piece. What is my job as a mom or a dad? What does a good parent even look like? And where did I come up with that idea? And how much of my parenting is coming from me trying to prove something to myself or take care of my own emotions versus actually being attuned to and in service of my child?
I love that. Do you work all virtually, right?
Yep, all virtually. So I have clients in like Europe, and I got a Czechoslovakian client a couple months ago. And yeah,
that is awesome.
Man, you are fabulous. I can think of so many different parents right now off the top of my head that could really, really benefit from your services and working with you.
I'm excited. Thank you.
So how do people find you? What's the best way? I would assume just your website, which is?
It's AnnKaplanParentCoach.com. Super easy.
Super easy. We'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah.
And is there a place on there, a form they can fill out to reach out to you?
You can get my free workbook on getting kids to listen the first time from that website. Mm-hmm. You can set up a discovery call. You can just send me a message if you want to. If you send me a message, I'll probably suggest that we have a discovery call, but that's fine. You can always that way. You can find all of my stuff there. You could even just enroll in the group program full out without even talking to me if you want to.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. And is that just ongoing or are there start and stop times?
Nope. It's always, and it's a forever program. Once you're in the group, you're in it forever. Until I retire. So I always guarantee everyone 6 months. So like, even if I decided to retire today, which is not going to happen, I would still run the group for 6 more months.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Really, because I think this is a benefit like all the way through to when you send your kids off to college and even just teaching them how to be independent and staying out of it. I mean, there's so many, you know, nuances all the way through to when they're married and have their own children.
Well, and at a certain point, it's basically like almost like free coaching because you don't pay forever. Once you pay, you're in and that's it. So
that's great.
Up front, and then I'm just in your life forever.
That is awesome. And about how often would a parent meet with you if they... Mm-hmm. We're taking you on as a coach.
Yeah. So my group program, I do weekly coaching calls in, and then we also have a private closed Facebook group where you can get coaching throughout the week for me. And I respond to stuff in that group within like an hour or so. And then if you're working with me privately, we meet every other week for 6 months.
Okay.
Oh, that's great. That gives you lots of time to practice in between.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when you're a private client of mine, you also have unlimited access to me. It's just not through a Facebook group, but it's through a video messenger I use called Marco Polo.
Oh, that's cool.
That is really cool. That's awesome.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. This has been so informative, so helpful. I'm so excited to share this with everybody. We very much appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule to share all your amazing information with us.
No, it was great fun. Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
If you guys have any questions, we'll put all of Ann's contact information in the show notes. If you'd like to reach out to her, if you have any questions for us or suggestions for future episodes, do not hesitate to email us at letstalklearningdisabilities@gmail.com. Our website is fully functioning, up and running for the podcast.
Yay.
But I can't remember what it is. We'll put it in the show notes. It's because it's not Let's Talk Learning Disabilities. I think it's LTD something. I don't know. We'll put it in the show notes. Anyway, you guys have
a
great day. It's brand new. And I'm like, I know we didn't put the whole name out there because it was way too long. So we'll figure it out.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you again, Anne, for joining us. And take care and have a great day.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining us today. In our show notes, you can find information about today's talk, as well as links to resources and other episodes. If you have questions about today's talk, have ideas for future episodes, or just want to stay connected, you can contact us through Diagnostic Learning Services on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram. So, let's keep talking learning disabilities. This podcast is sponsored by eDiagnostic Learning. You can find more information at www.ediagnosticlearning.com.